Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com. Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the podcast for the week of May 16th, 2022. I'm your host, Zach Joseph. We have Chris.
Hello.
Yeah, Chris, you're back from Hawaii.
I'm back from canceling all the Hawaiian shows on Hawaii.
Where they get Magna PI is gone, Hawaii 5-0 is gone. Like, what are they gonna do without over there?
I don't know. I'm surprised. Like,
they're gonna ride the NCIS Hawaii's wave.
Yeah, and then probably like a CSI.
I'm surprised there wasn't a CSI Hawaii at some point. I guess that's what NCIS is gonna be. But anyway, you're back. And it's a good week to be back because there's tons of news. We got a ton of trailers to talk about. We've got all sorts of crazy movie and TV news that came out because it's like the upfronts week for TV. So like there's all the networks have been like dropping like tons of TV news and like new shows and canceling stuff, which I dove into solo last week, like all the cancellations. But yeah, we'll get into all that later in a bit here. We have to kick things off with sad news. We lost a musical legend this week who contributed to like some of the most memorable music to movies. Vangelis, the Greek electronic pioneer, who his two most famous things are probably for movies is Chariots of Fire. He did the score for Chariots of Fire, which resulted in like a Billboard like top 10 like charting hit for like the I think it was the title theme from Chariots of Fire. And then Blade Runner are like obviously is two huge contributions to the world of movies. And then apparently he also did like the score for like Alexander, like the Colin Farrell, Oliver Stone movie.
Really?
Huh. And then 1492, Conquest of Paradise. Like he's a lot of like very like Blade Runner and Chariots of Fire are two big ones, and like a lot. Then also like a lot of like we like kind of like more obscure movies. Like he did like a like this Japanese movie Antarctica. And then a lot of his music has also like appeared in like stuff like shows like Cosmos, like the original like Carl Sagan Cosmos. He like I think he either contributed scores or they just used like his like previous music for in Cosmos. But just like super memorable like the Blade Runner and Chariots of Fire scores are just like so iconic and memorable. And then he was pretty much like the godfather of like all the like, you know, like synthwave, like a lot of the synthwave stuff that we get like now, like Stranger Things and all that stuff, like that you can trace it back to like Vangelis. It's like him and then like what's the other group? There's like another group that did like synthy kind of. I mean, I guess like John Carpenter also. Like if you're going like the like you know like the pioneers of that kind of electronic synthwave kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely like it's no. I mean, like I said, it's just like another famous composer that people just rely on.
Tangerine Dream was the other one I was thinking of. Like it's like Vangelis, Tangerine Dream, like those like. They were like you kind of like the modern like synthwave stuff kind of like you can trace it all back to those two.
Yeah. I definitely see like it definitely is like pivotal musicians that got the music out there through the movies. I feel like that's a lot of like scores come from lately. I mean, from like that generation was just like movies because it was hard to see like synth if it wasn't just like, I don't know, Electric Blue Orchestra or whatever.
Yeah,
kind of was in that 70s era of not like sci-fi themes and just like hippie synth.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, like that Blade Runner, the Blade Runner score is just like like yeah, I'm sure like everyone, all the people, anyone who's doing like kind of like, you know, retro synth, like synthwave kind of like electronic music is like influenced by the Blade Runner score.
Yeah, that was like the first one to do like dark synth, or mm-hmm. the structure for it.
But yeah, so R.I.P. Vangelis. Definitely, if you have not listened to like the Blade Runner score in a while, go listen to that, or go listen to that Chariots. The score for Chariots of Fire is better than the movie. Like the movie is like it's kind of boring and slow.
It's just a race, right?
Yeah, it's just guys training for a race and then running the race. But yeah, I mean the theme song for that is like the best thing about that movie probably. And it's also like as soon as you hear like a couple seconds of it, you know exactly what it is. I mean, it's one of the most iconic pieces of music ever. So
I always confuse that song and the beginning parts of Top Gun, where there's like a knockoff Chariots of Fire beginning.
Oh yeah, they kind of had that same kind of like build up a little bit where it's like before like Top Gun starts going like.
Yeah, it does like the slow like.
It's just like the build, yeah.
Yeah, the build-up almost follows the same thing for Friday 13th of like a. It's just like, oh man, like, is this Chariots of Fire? Like, is this. Nope, it's a bunch of jet engines now.
Yeah. We're heading into the danger zone, not the English beaches. But, R.I.P. Vangelis, we lost, like, just iconic musician. So, moving on, we got a ton of trailers to dig into this week, and we'll kick it off with, we got the trailer for The Terminal List, which is a new Prime Video series that's coming in July, starring Chris Pratt, and it looks like it's going to fit right alongside, like, Reacher and Jack Ryan. It's a military action, like, based on a book show. But basically, Chris Pratt stars as this Navy SEAL named James Reese, who is the only survivor of a mission that goes bad. Like all other members of the team are killed, and then he comes home. But then he starts like kind of trying to dig into like what happened or how they got ambushed, like why they got wiped out, and then kind of uncovers like conspiracies and like people behind like doing some shady stuff. So. And then he's having like conflicting, like, I don't know if he got like injured or he's just like something happened to him and like in the mission, but he's having like these like conflicting like memories of what happened. So he's trying to figure out what actually really happened. And he's also seems like he's like seeing like hallucinations or like visions of like his like dead teammates.
I think that's just PTSD. Like,
yeah, it's PTSD plus like something might have happened to him as well.
I think it's what's that movie where it was him entering the future?
Again? Oh, Tomorrow War.
Tomorrow is just glimmers of the Tomorrow World War he's in.
But yeah, so you got Chris Pratt, and then you got Antoine Fuqua is directing and executive producing it. They're so reteaming with Chris Pratt. They worked on the Magnificent Seven remake, if you remember that from a couple years ago.
I do. It's not too bad.
No, it was fine. Yeah. And then you also, along with Chris Pratt, you got Taylor Kitsch, you got Constance Wu, you got Gene Triplehorn, you got Patrick Schwarzenegger, you got Jai Courtney. I feel like Jai Courtney's gonna be the bad guy. Like he's like very like he's like sunglasses, business suit wearing guy. Like I feel like he's gonna be like one of the main guys behind like whatever conspiracy's going on.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be some op that you know they weren't supposed to survive.
Yeah, he's running like Jai Courtney's gonna probably be running some sort of like PMC or like evil like. Company or something, or like he's like a government higher up or something, or contractor.
The one thing I kind of see coming is that like they're trying to make it seem like it's all in Chris Pratt's head because they kind of are pushing that angle, mm-hmm. and then like it'd probably be like it's like a red herring, like oh no, like you saw exactly what you saw, and like the government's trying to make you seem crazy. There's no like. You know, sci-fi element where it's like the microchip in your brain is malfunctioning or like,
yeah.
You know, oh, it turns out you're a robot. You're a Blade Runner. Like, or you're like the replica. Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's going to be like, it's going to be more like Tom Clancy style, like it's just gonna be some sort of like shady government stuff going on.
Yeah, I can see that more than, I mean, it's not even, I get it, they want to push that, you know, there's more than meets the eye in this mm-hmm. thriller, but it'd be weird if it was, like, you know, if it wasn't severe brain trauma, because they even says in the trailer, like, what happened to me in there? It's like, probably a head injury.
He's getting a CAT scan and stuff, so,
yes.
He definitely suffers some sort of injury during the ambush that's, like, messing with his head.
Yeah, I don't see it being like, oh, no, like, it's some sort of malfunction in his memory bank or, you know, something. But only because if they're going for that Tom Clancy angle, you gotta stick to, the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Though I do wish it was sort of, like, sci-fi. Just crazier. To make it a little different. Yeah. Crazier, right? Yeah, just to amp it up. Because otherwise, we basically saw this movie. It's called, like, No Remorse or Without Remorse.
Yeah. It's definitely in that, like, yeah, it's definitely in that Prime Video wheelhouse of, like, the previous stuff they've done. So, but yeah, that's going to be July 1st on Prime Video, so you can check that out when that comes out. And then we also got the first full trailer for She-Hulk, which is now called She-Hulk Attorney at Law, which is going to be on Disney Plus in August. So the third new Disney Plus show that's going to be out this year. So we had Moon Knight already. We've got Miss Marvel coming up in like a couple weeks, I think. And then this will be in August. And Tatiana Maslany is playing Jennifer Walters, aka She-Hulk, who is the cousin to Bruce Banner. And then I don't think they explicitly say it in the trailer. I think it's implied because she gets in a car crash. Like, they seem to imply she's in a car crash, and that's why she gets the blood transfusion. They don't explicitly say, like, oh, you got a blood transfusion from your cousin Bruce Banner. Now you're the Hulk. Now you're also hulking out.
There was no other donors, like, in that all in that area. Like, I mean, plus that car crash was pretty bad. It, like, fell off a mountain.
Yeah. So I'm assuming she's in a car crash, and then, yeah, she has to get a blood transfusion from her cousin. And then, but then that causes her to, like, have Hulk powers. Which, it seems like they're, like, because, like, comic She-Hulk, she was just She-Hulk all the time. Like, she just was always She-Hulk. But, like, it seems like this version is gonna be more of like a like Hulk style where like she just hulks out if she gets like angry or whatever or like or her emotions go crazy. Because there's a lot of like there's like Bruce is like training her to like be able to like unleash her like She-Hulk powers.
I'm a little confused. It seems like you need Banner blood, like some sort of relative blood, to activate the gamma radiation. Is that why? Like,
well, that was I mean, the blood transfusion thing is straight from the comic. Like in the comic, right. Yeah, like She-Hulk got a blood transfusion from Bruce, her cousin, and that turned her into She-Hulk.
But I'm saying the whole process, like, you know, you need to have like those two elements, like the blood. I don't know if it was like it had to be. I get in the comic they were just like no, the blood made you do it, like because the hospital wanted Hulk blood, but. I don't know in the comic because it seems like, I mean, in the TV show, just like, okay, we're going to stress test you just to activate your latency power. So it's like, what if you're wrong? You just killed your cousin.
Yeah. And then she's also apparently working for, I'm not sure which shady Marvel government agency she's working for, but it's some sort of new initiative where like, it's like super powered law where she's like represent or like, take cases based on like superpowered people. So like one of them is like Emil Blonsky, aka Abomination, and she's like the new main lawyer for it,
the public defender, I guess,
public defender, or like she's like the prosecutor for like trying like these like superpowered cases or something. And then there's also like people point out like there's Frogman is in the trailer, so like Frogman's gonna show up at some point. I think didn't they mention that like Charlie Cox was gonna show up too at some point? Like that was like confirmed or something. That was like one of his other new like Matt Murdock appearances. I feel like I saw that or read that somewhere. That was like
I heard that like a rumor, but that's something that like
yeah
what happens with between the two of them, because they're like the number one Marvel lawyers, like She-Hulk and Daredevil. And it's just funny that She-Hulk has more problems because in the comic she couldn't like transform, so it's just like you're straight up like lawyering as She-Hulk, and then you're fighting crime as She-Hulk too, mm-hmm. where like these villains were like, were tracking her down where she worked.
Yeah. And then I think the big thing about the trailer too is like, which I don't know, like, I, what your thoughts on it, Chris, but like, what did you think of the CG for when
man, weird
Uncanny Valley.
I mean, I don't mind it for like a TV ad, but I have to stare at it for longer. It's going to get on to my vision. I've also seen people.
I was like, I think the only thing is like, they have whatever, 3 months or whatever, or 4 months to get it. Like, it might not be fully finished. So maybe they can like work on it a little bit more and get it like polished up.
If they could transform that Sonic the Hedgehog original design, they could definitely like figure out how to, I don't know, play with the lighting so the Hulk doesn't look like, you know, like at the Jolly Green Giant ad. Mm. There's like, I don't, here's the thing, Bruce Banner Hulk looks pretty good. Like, he looks movie accurate. Like, he, you know, like, it's not too bright green.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that they're really trying to make like the face look like Tatiana Maslany, like just like facial capture, like trying to like really like match her face and everything, and it's just like, it's like a little Uncanny Valley. Like,
yeah, I get it, but it feels like a Facebook, like Instagram filter on her, you know, like it looks very, yeah. Not gonna say low budget, because it's not like I can just do better, but I know they can do better. Like, they could like Mark Ruffalo looks really good as the Hulk.
Yeah. And
like, from even, he gets better in each movie. How do they backward step this just because it's a woman? Like, I get it. Like, it's like smooth, muscular face, but it's possible to do that without making it seem like a CW like CG effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully it's not finished yet. Hopefully this is like kind of like halfway there, and then they'll polish it up before August. But
you know, we had that theory about Moon Knight, and Moon Knight was like that, like a CGI creation half the time whenever Moon Knight was on screen.
Yeah.
And I could see them going like, fuck it, one season and we're done, like whatever. It's the streaming. it's the streaming quality version.
And yeah, so it's 9 episodes for She-Hulk when it comes out. It's gonna be all August 17th on Disney Plus, so put that on your calendar, get ready for that one. And then we also got the season 3 trailer for The Boys, the full trailer for season 3 of The Boys, which looks like all the mayhem you would expect from The Boys. it's picking up a year after season 2, so like things have been kind of like relatively quiet for like a year, but then shit starts happening again. Like, Homelander's getting more and more unhinged, and there's some sort of new, like, I think it's, like, Vault is, like, developing some sort of, like, in secret, like, some sort of, like, anti-soups weapon, or someone's developing, like, an anti-soups weapon that, like, catches the attention of Huey, who, like, works for, like, I think he's working for, like Homeland Security now.
Yeah, and he's like, more official now.
Yeah, and Butcher has to report to Huey.
That's different.
Yeah.
I mean, so in the original Boys, like, not to cut you off so much, but like, this is where like this arc sort of begins. Like, where basically the boys, to level the playing field, they do take a Vault formula, and then they are on level with the villains. That's why they're able to like kind of corral them. When like, you know, abuse didn't work, or like blackmailing.
Yeah. That's gonna be the big thing this season, is like there's a serum you could take that like gives you powers for 24 hours. So that's like, so Butcher's gonna take that try, like, and then he'll possibly be able to like take out Homelander like equal an equal footing for like a day.
Yeah, that happens in the comic where they basically have to juice up like once a month to get some sort of residual power. Mm-hmm. But they only have like strength. They don't really have light or
lasers, right? Yeah.
Like the female, she has like the strength. Like that's just built in her.
Yeah.
So because she was like experimented on. But for the rest of the team, like they have to take the injections. And then the first time Huey gets it, like, you know, he messes up all these other villains because he doesn't know his strength. So like one job of just simple like kind of like what is it called? Like muscle work or like collections or whatever. Mm-hmm. He accidentally kills the hero because he didn't know like how to like hold back. It's a pretty funny arc. Like it defines him as like the good guy of the group, like the morally like I guess like sane person of the group, because the rest of them kind of have their own agendas. But and then in the comic, like Hugh is just like, oh shit, like how can I keep doing this? And it's like, shut up and do your job. I'm excited to see it. Like,
and then your big thing too is that we're getting Soldier Boy, who's played by Jensen Ackles. It looks like we're getting like flashbacks to like, you know, like World War II Soldier Boy when he was like, you know, kind of like Vought's answer to Captain America. And then it looks like he's like getting thawed out in like the he's been on like ice or like in like stasis or something for like decades. Then they're like pulling him out of like the vault to like possibly deal with Homelander or deal with like some whatever new situation's happening. But yeah, I mean it seems like yeah, all the mayhem and all the craziness you would want from the boys. So, and that's gonna be, I think June is when that's June 23rd is when that's coming out. And I think they're doing these same kind of, June 3rd, so that's like in 2 weeks from now. And they're doing the kind of same thing where it's like the first three are going to drop on June 3rd, and then it's going to be weekly after that. And then we also got the trailer for Spider-Head, which is a new Netflix movie that's coming up soon here on June 17th. This is the new Chris Hemsworth Netflix movie, which... I thought when I heard about this, they put out one promo shot of like, it was like Chris Hemsworth on like a boat, like a speedboat. And I was like, oh, is this like a spy movie? Like, is this like a new, like Chris Hemsworth, like espionage movie? And it's like, no, it's not that. It's like a weird, it's going to be a crazy, like trippy, like mind altering movie. And it's basically Chris Hemsworth is running like this like experimental prison where the inmates basically agree to like I think if they get like reduced sentences if they like agree to like these experiments they're like Chris Hemsworth like is like testing these drugs on them that like I think they're like she's like trying to like simulate like emotions or like mind altering substances. So it's like doing all these experiments on the inmates, and then like it looks like things like get like out of hand where like people start dying and people start like killing each other and stuff. So, and then Miles Teller and Journey Smollett are two of the inmates, and they're like trying to like, they figure out that like eventually are like trying to escape or get out.
Huh, that's not what I thought that movie was gonna be about.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be like more of like a like more like a more like spy version of like Extraction or something, and it's just like, no, this is like a weird like drug movie, like a mind fuck movie, like
yeah like a okay escape plan meets like Jacob's Ladder sort of the mind tripping thing. And then it's like Chris Hemsworth is not really an action star, he's a warden, like,
yeah,
it's just I guess he didn't want to like do a shirtless scene for this movie, so he's like, put me in a suit behind a glass wall or something.
Yeah, definitely the more like sinister Chris Hemsworth that we saw like Bad Times at the El Royale. Maybe not all the way to like Bad Times at the El Royale, Chris Hemsworth, but like he's definitely much. He's definitely like doesn't give a shit like if he's like killing these people or like he's just like, I only care about my experiments and whatever happens, who cares?
Yeah, he's more like a Jigsaw guy, just testing out these like things. What's the point though? Like, was it just this experiment on this, or was it like he's getting paid to do it? I don't like. Is it even obvious in the trailer?
I think like the plot summary and stuff says like he's trying to make like drug, like he's trying to make a drug that like simulates love or something, or simulates like drugs that like simulate like emotions, so you can like basically have like an emotion in a pill. Or like an injection or something.
See, like, I mean, I'm not sure. You probably talked about this last week for the Resident Evil trailer too.
Oh, jeez.
Did you talk about that?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, what's up with these drug companies? This plot line, especially Netflix now, where it's like drugs that like are supposed to do like antidepressants that now have become sinister.
Yeah. Well, Resident Evil, they're using the T virus. It's like that can only end badly,
like instantly.
Yeah. Well, you're surprised that like you're like antidepressant that like it was full of like mutagenic like zombie juice caused the apocalypse, like. But yeah, so Spiderhead, June 17th. It's also directed by Joseph Kaczynski, who has Top Gun Maverick coming out like next week. So double dose of Joseph Kaczynski this year if you're into his like visual style and stuff. So, and then we also got the trailer for a new FX show that's been in development for. I heard about this like 2 years ago or something. It's been a while in development, but it's finally coming out. The Old Man, which stars Jeff Bridges, like this ex-CIA agent who kind of gets drawn back into the world of espionage because like assassins try to kill him, and so he like kind of like leaves, like he's been like living off the grid, but then he has like kind of like leave his like house and figure out like who's trying to kill him, and it kind of has like a definitely has like a kind of Bourne or like a that kind of style where it's just like he's like trying to hunt down who said the assassins, and the CIA is trying to like, or the FBI is trying to like track him down and stop him.
I don't know if they're trying to stop him or retire him too, like it's kind of like a Red situation.
Yeah, or they're afraid he's gonna figure out something or that he shouldn't, and they're like they want to stop him before he does. Or anybody expose something about that, like, and then John Lithgow is like the head of the FBI who's like trying to like hunt, like, and then they used to like work together, so like he's the one assigned to like bring Jeff Bridges back in. And this is another based on a novel show. It's based on a novel called The Old Man, and it was created by Jonathan E. Steinberg, who previously create like Jericho and Black Sails and Human Target. But okay. I mean it looks awesome. It's just like badass Jeff Bridges like just go around the world just like doing spy stuff. He's got like a pair of like Rottweilers. He's like shoot like just like doing all sorts of spy stuff. So yeah, I'm 100% in.
I don't know how many episodes you think this is going to be. Is it going to be like a limited series or just kind of like, you know, one long kind of movie they've broken up?
It's going to be, I don't think they have, I don't think they've said how many episodes. Like the first two are going to debut on FX on June 16th. And then I think it's going to be like 8 or 10 or something. So, and it obviously will also be on like FX, and it'll be on Hulu the next day, so you can watch it either place. It's not an FX on Hulu one where it's like exclusively on Hulu. It's gonna be on like regular FX, like the cable network. So,
wow, so it's not on FXX.
No, FXX is like comedy. They all the comedy stuff is on FXX, and then FX is like the dramas. But yeah, hopefully this is just another addition to like FX's like awesome track record of just like, I mean, the, FX probably has like one of the best track records for like a network of all time. Like they have like Justified and The Americans and Legion and Archer and What We Do in the Shadows and Sons of Anarchy and The Shield, like and the, like others. It's just, like they've had so many like awesome shows. So hopefully this is another like entry in that catalog. And then last trailer to talk about is we got the teaser for Prey, which is going to be the next entry in the Predator franchise, which is going to be, speaking of Hulu, it's going to be a Hulu exclusive. And it's going to be out in August 5th. It's going to be it's directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who directed 10 Cloverfield Lane and the first episode of The Boys. And it's set like in 300 years ago in like the Great Plains, and it's a Comanche warrior. It's played by Amber Midthunder from Legion, and she is like trying to track down this threat that's like threatening her tribe, and it turns out the threat is a predator. So it's like a Native American warrior versus a predator.
It feels like kind of unfair for the Native American tribe. They have like sticks and arrows and.
Yeah, but
the Predator has like legit laser cannons. Yeah.
Well, that'll be like the interesting part about the movie probably is like just like how they figure out a way to like fight the Predator with like their bows and their like whatever else they can figure out.
Yeah, but it's a cool premise. I feel if you're a
fan of the Predator, you love the idea of him fighting anything.
Yeah, this feels like a throwback to like the like Dark Horse comics where they would just like throw the Predator to like he's like it's the Predators of the Civil War now. He's in World War One. Like it's they're like they show up in like pirate times. This is like they're just like whenever there was like conflict, they would just throw the Predator in there. And it was always like fun and interesting to be like, oh, how are like Civil War soldiers gonna fight the Predator? Like so. And also just like a like stripped down, like straightforward, like duel like between people like characters after like the Predator and all the nonsense that happened in the Predator and stuff, like I feel like a stripped down Predator movie is kind of like what the franchise needs right now.
Yeah we don't need kind of like crazy Predator alien worlds. We don't need Civil War Predator things going on, like hierarchy Predator,
and then one good Predator, one bad Predator, and then like the Predators are giving us like power armor or something, whatever the hell that like sequel setup that never happened was gonna be.
Yeah, just I like it's very bare bones and a little too much bare bones on the human side, but I like the concept. I think like this is based on like a fan art photo of like a Native American fighting a predator. They're like, that's cool, and then it's like that just became a whole world that they expanded on.
There's also a really awesome like fan movie a couple years ago that was like it was like Predator versus like a medieval knight.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
and like they like fought the Predator just by like throwing people at them and then sort of figuring out slowly like how to get him down to just the bare basics of his knife versus a sword. But that's like the tactic. Like, unfortunately, that's the formula. You basically have to like knock off the helmet and then fight him one-on-one with just like sharp things. Mm-hmm. That's basically what every Predator, like the best Predator movies have done. I know some people weren't a fan of Predator 2, but like, I like Predator 2.
Yeah, Predator 2's fun.
It's still weird to see, like, Danny Glover fight a Predator, but
yeah,
it still works. Mm-hmm. Did we do a commentary on Predator 2?
I don't think we have.
Huh.
Put that in the back catalog, the back burner. I guess I'll play with that. But yeah, Prey is coming out in August, so definitely excited for that. Check that out on Hulu when that comes out. So moving on to other news, we were talking about Daredevil a little bit ago, if he's going to show up in She-Hulk, but some form of Daredevil is going to show up on Disney Plus because they are apparently moving forward with a kind of like a continuation sort of reboot of the Netflix show. So there's going to be a Daredevil Disney Plus MCU show. It's coming from the guys who made Covert Affairs on USA. If you remember that show, like the Piper Perabo spy show.
Holy shit, from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so those guys that made that are working on this new Daredevil show. Disney and Marvel have not officially said, like, they have not confirmed anything. There's like no comment. They've not said anything about, like, it's not official yet. We don't know if Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio are coming back, even though they've both shown up in like proper MCU things recently. If you didn't do Daredevil, you didn't have those guys back, like, what are you even doing?
why even renew contracts or,
yeah,
you know, whatever they've been doing.
Unless you're like, oh, it's another universe, but then like, why, why have like Charlie Cox show up in Spider-Man No Way Home and have like Vincent D'Onofrio show up in Hawkeye if they're not gonna like be actually in like the like 616 regular MCU universe? Like, but yeah, I mean, hopefully I don't know what a news like Daredevil would be on Disney Plus. Like, I'm sure they would probably have to tone it down a little bit from the Netflix show. Like, it probably couldn't be as violent. Like,
he's gonna be fighting with like pillows or something.
Yeah,
he's slapping them to sleep.
But I mean,
I bet you they're never gonna bring up like the Hand or Elektra or like anything about Stick and Love.
Do you think like, I mean, I'm sure they probably wouldn't, like, I think those shows are kind of like sort of like wiped out of canon. I mean, the characters are still there, but I don't know if they would like fall, because like Daredevil ended with like the cliffhanger was like they were turning Bullseye into Bullseye.
Yeah, not like a hired.
That was literally the last scene that we ever saw of Daredevil. Was like they were turning like the guy, like the pre Bullseye guy, into Bullseye.
Steve shaved his head.
I remember like it was Kingpin was like was doing like he had him in a surgical room and they were like doing some sort of procedure on him, and then his like eyeball turned into a bullseye, and that was the last scene of like we ever saw of Daredevil.
And then the Kingpin went on a Hawaiian vacation.
Yeah. He was running things during the blip or whatever. So.
Oh yeah, did Daredevil season 3 take place before or after the blip?
I think it was way before Endgame and everything. So yeah, they barely acknowledged like Avengers and like the original Avengers. Like they so like I think it was like those shows were like also like it was like free. They never mentioned like the Sokovia Accords or anything. Like it was just like. Nope.
No, yeah. The only thing they mentioned was the attack in
Battle of New York. Yeah,
Battle of New York. That's it.
Oh, did they always call it the incident or like? But yeah, so I guess we'll wait and see. I mean, this is super early stages. Like they're not even like officially acknowledging that this is a thing yet. But like apparently the major places that if they're talking about it, it's probably true. Like Variety and Deadline and stuff are talking about it. So yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on it. We'll definitely see if like they acknowledge it, and then like if Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio are officially back, and then what else is going on with it. Maybe if there is like a Daredevil cameo in She-Hulk, that'll be when they officially like acknowledge it of like, oh yeah, hey, Daredevil's back in She-Hulk and he's getting his own show again. Like,
cool. That'd be cool. Nice little like segue.
Mm-hmm. So we also got news this week that there's gonna be a Rick and Morty anime show.
I thought that was a joke.
Nope, it's Rick and Morty's officially getting an anime spin-off show. So yeah, so Rick and Morty the anime, it's gonna be 10 episodes. It'll be on Adult Swim and then stream on HBO Max later. which there's been like two like shorts. I don't know if you have you seen those, Chris? Like the Rick and Morty like anime shorts.
I thought they were like bumpers. I didn't actually watch. I think there was one where it's like a lone wolf and cub one. I think.
Yeah, there was like two, from the anime studio that does Shenmue, the anime, and Tower of God. Yeah, and they were sort of like bumpers, where they're kind of like just like they like airs like shorts during Adult Swim, and they're on YouTube. You can check them out if you want. But it's gonna be that like it if you've seen those anime shorts for Rick and Morty, it's gonna be that style. And it's the same director, Takashi Sano, who directed Tower of God, the anime, and then, yeah, he's directing all the episodes of this. And, yeah, 10 episodes of Rick and Morty anime adventures. I don't know what that's going to be, but, I mean, you might watch those shorts, and you probably get an idea of what it's going to be. It's basically Rick and Morty, but, like, through, like, crazy Japanese, like... There's like it's like it's pretty much what you would imagine it. I don't think it's gonna be like when Rick went anime and like had like the crows and stuff and he was just like wandering around like in like season or whatever last season. Like it's gonna be like actual anime style. It might even be I think the shorts are in Japanese and stuff, so it's gonna be. It's gonna be strange, I think, but more Rick and Morty for you. And then we also got some crazy news this week that Hulu is rebooting The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. So we're gonna get a new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen movie on Hulu. It's gonna be a Hulu exclusive. No casting news, no directing news. The only news we have is that Justin Haythe, who wrote Revolutionary Road and some other dramas, is going to be writing the script. But yeah, I mean, what would you want from a new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Chris?
I kind of want them to take the time to like tell each chapter properly. You know, like in the movie, they really crammed in a big amount of arcs of character development and like,
yeah,
you know, the villain. Just it like, it's funny because I recently saw the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It was on TV, and it was just playing, and it's just I like it only for the Sean Connery factor.
Yeah, the movie that he hated so much that it made him quit acting forever.
I know, like what a weird way to. Bookend his live action career.
Just I'm fucking done. Like,
but I mean, like it's not terrible. Like it's not unwatchable. There are way worse movies than that. But for such a like,
it's trying too hard to be cool. Like yeah. it's like they have like Tom Sawyer is like the cool guy, and they have like the car. They have like the car and like.
The dumb Nemo car.
Yeah, like it's just, like
in the book it didn't even have.
It was trying to be like Matrixy and like
also tried to be a little too futuristic in the sense where like there's like modern technology that like it just didn't fit in the scope of the story. You're trying to be Victorian times.
Yeah.
And then obviously we've seen movies where there's a little bit of future tech, like, you know, The King's Man.
Yeah,
and it fits better.
If this was like The King's Man, then yes, that should be the stuff. Like that should be like the like kind of like look like inspiration for this new one. Like, why am I blanking on the director? Matthew Vaughn. Like, get Matthew Vaughn to direct this movie. Like.
Mm-hmm. He gets like how to use the set piece correctly and then play around with how you make it cool in that era with like scope. But you can't dump in like, I don't know, like robot Iron Man in this movie at the end of the tale. Like this is one scene where like they introduce all like the crazy like steampunk technology. There's legit like an Iron Man, an iron suit that's in there, and they still get defeated. Like, you could still blow up the Iron Man with like a bullet in the right spot. Like, it was just so like, wow, they're gonna make a whole army of these slow moving like tank people that are still vulnerable. But then like the buildup was still pretty cool in that. Like, I still like the idea that, you know, the league was formed so that basically these would be the worst threats to the villain, and then he reverse engineered all of their abilities. Mm-hmm. But three people in that group basically just had weapons. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't like, oh, they're stealing like, their powers. Yeah, they just had guns.
Sean Connery is an awesome shot. Tom Sawyer is an awesome shot.
Like, Nemo was just like a kung fu fighter.
Yeah, like it was like Dr. Jekyll and
the vampire lady.
Yeah, Mina Harker had like they actually had like actual powers.
And then the Invisible Man, his power was stealth, but like, it did make him invulnerable. Like, he still can get shot. He, in fact, like, he gets burned really bad, and then they just don't acknowledge it by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
In the comic, spoiler alert, he's the villain. Like, mm-hmm. he's also, like, a villain person. And it makes sense, because he's a thief. And then I think it was too obvious. And Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde, like, he snaps halfway through the original arc. Like, he kind of goes berserk. He's like the Hulk in that sense where, like, you don't really partner with him. You just sort of, like, work together until, like, he decides, like, he's done. But then he has, like, a redemption arc. And then if the original comic is, like, all sorts of, like, zany in the period piece. And but that's what comics can do better than live action. If they try to go for the real villain of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen where, like, aliens invade...
Is it the aliens from War of the Worlds?
Yep, it's H.G. Wells era, so it's like it makes sense why like old dumb Victorian aliens show up and then they fight the aliens. And then really the Moriarty thing is from like series two. Where it's like James Bond is sort of there and like it's like early versions of other characters are there, then like Quartermain, it's young Quartermain, which he claims he's the son of Quartermain, but I think it's actually like real Quartermain. I forgot if it's like what's the truth.
Yeah. So hopefully this new one can like maybe like kind of like be more true to the comic. I still have like another thing they should like maybe like look at for inspiration is Penny Dreadful.
That's a good one. Basically, just make Penny Dreadful again. I think when we even said when Penny Dreadful came out, we're like,
this is basically what like Rory Shelvin.
Yeah.
I mean, they kind of had like the, it was like, I mean, it was obviously more like horror leaning. Like, it was more like Wolfman, Vampire, like, but like, I mean, Dalton was basically like Quartermain. Like he was like straight up just like, yeah, like Quartermain. So yeah, I guess this is also like pretty super early in development, so this will probably be a couple years away before we see it on Hulu, but definitely interested to see what they're gonna do with that comic. Definitely deserves another shot at a movie. And then we also got news this week about the ever-expanding Yellowstone cinematic universe or television universe. So obviously you have the main show. You've got 1883 came out, I think, last year or like early this year. And now there's gonna be a 1932 show that's also in the Yellowstone universe. And Helen Mirren and Harrison Ford are gonna star in that show.
Interesting.
And yeah, still from Taylor Sheridan, who's like is creating this whole universe. It's gonna be the, you know, Dutton ancestors, so it's the, you know, the ancestors like Kevin Costner and his family, who are living in like, you know, 1932, obviously, and dealing with like the Great Depression and Prohibition and all that stuff. And yeah, it's pretty much like, yeah. There's no like where to like who Helen Mirren and Harrison Ford are gonna play, but they're gonna be starring in it. And there's also gonna be a spinoff So 1883 is also getting its own spinoff.
Which, like, already?
Yeah, it's which they, because they had someone, like, they had a character, like, someone playing Bass Reeves, like, you know, like the iconic, like, black lawman from with the Wild West. Like, he, so it's gonna be a show focused on him. So, like, 1883, the Bass Reeves story,
based on, like, a true character. And
yeah. Bass Reeves is like a like actual historical, like, he was like like, he basically, he's the inspiration for the Lone Ranger. Like, the Lone Ranger is based on this, like, actual real life, like, lawman sheriff, like, Bass Reeves. And yeah, and then, like, like, Paramount Plus, like, I feel like 70 or 80% of the content, the original content, is just, like, Taylor Sheridan shows. Like, he's just gonna, like, own the entire, like, streaming service. Like, he's got 1883, 1932, this Bass Reeves show. He's got Mayor of Kingstown is also his. He's gonna have that new Stallone show, Tulsa King, is gonna be his. Like, he's got two other shows that are coming to Paramount Plus. It's just, like, where does he have the time and, like, the way was just, like, rename Paramount Plus to, like, Sheridan Plus or something. It's gonna be like every, like, almost every show that's, like, an original show that besides, like, Halo, it's the Star Trek stuff, is Taylor Sheridan shows. But it's also weird too, because, like, Yellowstone is not on Paramount Plus because they made that terrible deal with Peacock before they decided to make their own streaming service.
But this one can, right? These spinoff shows.
That's why they're like going so hard into, like, all these spinoff shows that are, like, and I think, like, the CEO of Paramount was like, yeah, we are never doing a deal like that ever again. all of our content is for Paramount Plus, and that is it. Like, we are never making a deal with anyone ever again.
We're not even putting ads and other like things.
Yeah. Cause that has bitten them the ass so hard of just, like, they don't have Yellowstone on their on their streaming service.
That's weird. I didn't realize that's, like, on Peacock.
Cause they made a deal when, like, it was just, like, very early, like, CBS All Access days, and they weren't really sure where they were going with it. So they're like, oh yeah, well, Peacock can have Yellowstone. That's a good deal. Like, we'll make some money from that. And then they made Paramount Plus. Now it's just like, oh, Yellowstone is the biggest show on television, and we can't get it back. But yeah, there's gonna be a ton, there's all sorts of other, the, like, expanding Yellowstone universe is gonna be on Paramount Plus though. So if you're looking for Yellowstone stuff, there's tons of like three prequels and probably more on the way. So last bit of news for the week is we got some casting news for some upcoming stuff. So for Fast X, which is, I think they figured out their directing issue. Like, Louis Leterrier is like officially on to direct it after Justin Lin stepped down. But we got some news that Scott Eastwood is gonna be back as little nobody, or Mr. Nobody's assistant. So yeah, he'll be back in the Fast universe. And then we also found out Alan Richson, aka Jack Reacher himself, is gonna be in Fast X.
Oh yeah, he's gonna. Isn't Jason Momoa also on Fast X?
Jason Momoa is gonna be one of the bad guys. Charlize Theron's back. Brie Larson is gonna be in it. Michael Rooker is gonna be in it, or back, I guess. And I obviously since he was back in Fast 9, Sung Kang's back. Like obviously the entire, like, Fast family's back, and then they added like a bunch of Jason Momoa and Brie Larson, and now Alan Richson and Scott Eastwood's back. Man, I'm not sure if John Cena's back. Can you imagine, like, Alan Richson versus John Cena versus Vin Diesel? Like, just, like, the slabs of meat just, like, hitting each other.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool. Just, like, it's like taking a bunch of, like, wrestler action figures and throw them at each other.
Yeah. It'll be like that, like, Vin Diesel Rock fight from Fast Five, but just, like, even bigger. So yeah, so that's coming out next year. They're shooting it right now. Hopefully we'll see something about that maybe toward the end of this year. And then we also got some casting news for the Twisted Metal show, which is gonna be on Peacock, which we already knew Anthony Mackie was starring in. And then we found out, kind of like late last week, early this week, Thomas Hayden Church is going to be co-starring in it as one of the villains. He's going to be playing Agent Stone, who, if you played the games, he's the driver of Outlaw. And it sounds like he's going to be kind of the same kind of character. He's going to be like a evil highway patrolman who gets in the way of or attacks Anthony Mackie's character at some point, or is like hunting him down at some point.
And it's confirmed that Anthony Mackie's not Sweet Tooth, right? He's just like a guy.
He's John Doe. So I don't know if they're gonna like reveal his actual character, if he's the original character for the show, or if they're gonna like reveal like, oh, he's actually this character from the game or something. But right now they're just saying he's John Doe.
I bet you in a dumb way it like he becomes Sweet Tooth or something.
That's the twist,
or it's like how Sweet Tooth starts. It's like he's an innocent guy.
Because he has to deliver a package across like the apocalyptic wasteland, so it's like maybe the package is like some sort of like, I don't know, magical power or something, and turns him into Sweet Tooth or something. That'd be like so stupid. But and then we also found out that Stephanie Beatriz from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Encanto is going to be playing Quiet, who is going to be like basically like Anthony Mackie's partner. Like they teamed up together to like deliver this package. She's like a badass car thief. I think the only like official like game character right now is Thomas Hayden Church, because like Agent Stone is actually a character for the games.
So wait, who was
Stephanie Beatriz is playing Quiet? Yeah, I don't think a character from the games. I was looking for like, is there a character named Quiet from Twisted Metal? I mean, there's like obviously like Metal Gear Solid's Quiet, but I
don't know. All right, well, what a weird Twisted Metal show that is not utilizing anything. Yeah. Also, is Twisted Metal on Paramount Plus?
No, Peacock. That's what
Peacock. Yeah, all right.
Peacock exclusive. It's gonna be more of like it's an action comedy. It's gonna be like a half hour like action comedy. And from like Will Arnett is like an executive producer, and like one of the guys who wrote Cobra Kai, and then Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick from Deadpool and Deadpool 2 are executives on it. So it seems like the guys, like everyone kind of like behind the scenes on it, it seems like it's going to be more of like a like comedy show with like action, like lots of like, you know, like one-liners and like more. It's not gonna be like Twisted Metal Black or anything. It's gonna be like a more like wacky,
like wacky races, except you know, they're all killers.
And that will be it is a PlayStation Studios production, so it's gonna be the same Sony branch that's making, that made Uncharted, and helping make Last of Us. So very different projects for PlayStation Productions. Like they're having like, you know, like super wacky Twisted Metal, like the probably super serious Last of Us show, and then like goofy like Uncharted movie. Like,
well, no, you can't blame for Sony for not diversifying.
And then I think God of War's coming to Prime Video, I believe, at some point. So
see, when it's like that's when I'm like, it's really hard to track where to watch these shows, because you gotta like jump around a lot.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's like, if you subscribe to like every major subscription, it's like at that point you're kind of just paying like cable levels again. Like you're paying like $100 a month for like all these different streaming services. It's like, man, might as well just get cable again. But yeah, that's pretty much it for news this week. So why don't you jump into show and tell? And Chris, did you see anything over the last week or so here? I know you were like, obviously you were on vacation, but like, I think you said, and then like the way there, the way back, you saw a couple things maybe?
I have. So I saw Senior Year, the Netflix original movie with
Rebel Wilson.
Rebel Wilson, where she played a, well, So the story follows a teenage girl who is 17, and she sort of like builds her new persona to be this number one person because she has this like dream where if she became prom queen, her life will be set forever. Mm-hmm. And so she's this cheer captain who sparks a rivalry with one of these girls. And then to get back at her, they plan to like drop her during this routine for like homecoming. And it goes terribly wrong. And Rebel Wilson enters a 20 year coma. And like from 1999 something like 1999 or 2000. And she wakes up in 2002 as a 37-year-old woman with the mind of a 17-year-old. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of has to like in a very short time, like come to terms that, you know, like 20 years passed, there's all these changes in her life. The people who like she made friends with in high school have now are adults, and they sort of don't remember high school the way she remembers it. But to her, high school was like yesterday. So she's like shocked to learn of her consequences. And it's weird because like the movie does have an excuse where she's like, hey, the best thing for me is to go back to high school to relive my like youth and to like get it out of my system, because like I don't have that memory like in my late 30s. Like it'd be like way worse for me to just continue like this. So they agree, like the school, high school agrees, because like her best friend is now like the principal of the school, and her other best friend is like the librarian. So they're like, okay, we'll help you transist and finish out the year. And then it's pretty funny because it's like a commentary on like modern day youths, where like what things are important to people back then is now harder because teens now have to compete with like other teens in the world. So it's not like, oh, it's like your local drama. It's like, no, you're trying to be like such a popular person like online, and like it's not just like, oh, small hometown shit. It's like, you know, being famous for being famous everywhere, like you're mm-hmm. it's a constant competition. So the movie does a really good point to like show that and the difference. And then the movie though has this weird sense of presentation because it's a comedy, so that's fine. However, there's certain sequences where like it breaks into a full-blown like music video, and it's a fantasy, so like they kind of explain like they're making fun of like they make fun of like the original Britney Spears Crazy music video. Mm-hmm. Where Rebel Wilson is playing the part of Britney, and they kind of have like a dance routine with some of the characters, and it's like, okay, that's all in their head, and you know, that's not actually happening. But later on in the movie, there are scenes where like they're dancing and not really singing, just kind of dancing. You're like, oh, this is like a fantasy sequence, because it showed you that, you know, she has sort of like a distorted reality because she's so like egotistic. They do like scenes like that, but there's at least two scenes where it's like a dance number, and you're like, wait, no, this is real. Like they're okay. Like everyone's okay with what's going on. Like this is very strange. It's not musical, you know, structure where you can have a dance number and that's just the routine. You know, oh, the guy's just dancing on his way to work, or you know, that's just what they do every Tuesday. You know, like it's not that. This is
It kind of sounds like you know, like Teen Witch had like two dance numbers, and then but it's not a musical, but there's like randomly just two dance numbers in it.
Yeah, I guess it's that rule of just it's a musical.
Because Teen Witch has that scene in like the girls' locker room that's like just like a full on like musical number, but then they never do anything like that really again. They have
acknowledge it.
Yeah, no, like no one ever, because I think Teen Witch was supposed to be a musical. They did, like cut all the musical numbers out except for like the one. But
I mean, Rebel Wilson has a movie that's like it, where she like goes into a coma and then she believes the world is like a romantic comedy, or like it's trying really hard to force it to be that way.
Yeah, that came out like what, 2 years ago or a couple years ago.
And it's funny for that structure, but for somehow it bleeds over into here. So it's still kind of weird. But the movie does a good job of pointing out how bizarre it is to have a 37-year-old woman pretend that she's like thinks she's 17. There's a lot of like, you know, grounded reality jokes. That's like, yeah, like what you're doing now is like super illegal, and you can't be around alcohol and children. Like, it's not a good look.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's fun that way. So, again, it's not action-y, but I like the concept. And Rebel Wilson is not terrible, but it's like she just plays Rebel Wilson and everything. So it's not like she's trying something new. She's literally just Rebel Wilson. But Chris Parnell is in this movie, and he does an awesome job as Rebel Wilson's father. Like, I'm not sure he's in any of the promotional stuff, but it's like he's pretty fun. He's a pretty fun character where he's a dad who starts out working in Blockbuster. And then, like, in the 20-year span, he worked up to Best Buy. And he sort of, like, freaked out by his daughter going to a coma. But then when she's back, he's like, well, like, shit, I forgot how to be, like, a parent. Like, you know, he's just, like, trying to do his best while, like, trying to maintain, like, his sanity of just, like, yelling at a 37-year-old woman. He's like, I shouldn't be, like, telling you, like, don't do this, you should know. But she's like reminding him, like, I'm 17 in my head, like, I don't know anything. And he's just like, oh shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty fun. Yeah, it, definitely not like go out and watch it, but it's just like if you got nothing else to do and you just feel like a comedy, like it's a great, it's not like a great comedy, but it's like a decent comedy that like you kind of get like the whole premise of the movie pretty quick. And then like it's just popcorn watching, you know, it's not surprisingly like deep. It's very basic because again, the movie does like a very bare bones example of like, you know, what your dreams are, isn't who you are going to be, or like, you know, you always have a chance to grow. But that message gets kind of like muddled when you're like, oh, the girl, the dream of a 17-year-old girl who suddenly becomes 37. It's like, oh yeah, like her high school dreams are bullshit. Like, don't, your adolescent dreams are never your real dreams, or like the dreams change. Again, kind of stolen from 13 going on 30.
Mm-hmm.
Was it called 13 going on 30?
I mean, there's been the whole. I mean, this is not like a body swap or like a de-aging movie, but like, yeah, 13 going on 30 was like the Jennifer Garner one.
Right, but that's another one where it's like, oh, but your dreams as a kid.
That was like big though, where like she was a teen, then she like woke up, and she was like a grown woman.
But this is the same premise where it's like she was 17 and then woke up, became 37.
Yeah,
so it's sort of like a nice parody on that.
But yeah, but it's not like a magical reason. It's just like she went to a coma. Like,
also, that movie had a dance number that sort of is explained. They dance the Thriller dance, and then it's like. But that's like normal at a dance party, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So I feel like it's like a parody of 13 going on 30, because it's like 17 going on 37, and then it's not who you think it's gonna be about. You know, Rebel Wilson is like, yeah, like she points out that like, holy shit, like this is not what I thought I would grow up to be and stuff. So it's pretty funny. They also explain that she has an Australian accent is because like she's like. Her mom's Australian, so it's like she has an Australian accent, and her dad met her somehow in Australia. So, you know, the movie's probably good at covering the basis.
They probably could have just been like, oh, you had like, you know, some people like go into a coma and they wake up and they like have like an accent that they never had, talk in our language or something. Like, they could have just been like, oh yeah, that was part of your coma, like you have an Australian accent.
They could have done that, but like, they went for the simple like she's also Australian. And yeah. I don't know about you, but like for some reason in the beginning of the movie, like they're just like, oh, you're from Australia, ew. It's like, what high school is this? And then I think the high school is like in Maryland, you know. It's like, it's just like, it's not LA, it's just Maryland. So why is that like strange? You know, it's like, are Maryland kids assholes? Like, this movie paints a lot of pictures where it's like, one, teenage dreams are stupid, like never follow them. Then two, the big thing about the movie is that Rebel Wilson has like a dream board that she like does the crazy man like string thing, like to like, okay, like in order to do this I needed like accomplish these goals, and she like draws and makes a collage and does like strings to point out where her goals are. Mm-hmm. It's like dream boards are helpful, but it seemed like dream boards are evil in this movie, where it's like, no, the dreams you're thinking of are dumb and like they hurt people, and like you should be more than like your dreams because there's other people you got to care about. That I'm like, what's this message about? Like, don't have dreams because like it'll hurt others. Like, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, before that movie gets, that part gets too deep, the movie ends. So it's like, let's not think about that. But yeah, I, for like watching it on an airplane, pretty fun. And then the next movie I saw, or the next things I saw, was season two of Russian Doll. Mm-hmm. The like time traveling New York based comedy that stars I forgot her name, like Natasha Lyonne. Yeah, Natasha Lyonne is pretty funny. Like, she, in the first season, you kind of learn a lot about her, that she's like a no shits given person who, when her time traveling events begin, where every time she would time travel, she was going to like alternate realities, and then she was reliving her same day over and over again. Mm-hmm. I think I it was either the same day or like it was like Groundhog's Day, but with like a person who doesn't really.
Yeah, it was like a time loop.
Yeah. This time around, season two, almost most of all these supporting characters are back, but the new loop is that it's not like a loop. It's a time travel like story where she has to take like a train line that takes her back into the past where she is like not born yet. And it actually does a body swap where every time she goes back in the past, she controls the body of her mother. Like, her mom's conscious swaps out for hers.
Okay.
And then she's trying to figure out like what's up with her family's like lineage and stuff. And then it's hinted that there's possibly like time travel things in their bloodline. So it's like she's only the reason why she's able to time travel is through like some sort of curse or family thing. You know, it's sort of like now they're building up that lore, which is fine. Cause like if the Russian Doll first season, like you didn't really need to know. You just sort of like, oh, they're just sort of, you know, in a loop and they need to figure out how to break the loop, but like no explanation of like why. In this, they're sort of going for the like, okay, let's build that up a bit, but do you care if you know or not? And I'm three episodes in, and it's just like fun, silly time travel things that's going on, not really so much like answers or the science, but. And that's the thing about her character. It's sort of like she's sort of like such a jaded, cynical person that she like doesn't. She's just enjoying the ride. She's not trying to like fix shit yet. She's sort of like, all right, like this is cool. Hey, let me buy like shit that's cheaper back here, and like, you know, I get to try drugs that don't exist anymore, like Quaaludes and like old 80s drugs that just basically like, you know, were banned. Because mm-hmm. she plays a character who just likes partying, like drinking drugs and stuff. So it's fun. I'm going to watch more of it, of course, just to see if it's actually like a good season or not. But, you know, it won awards the last time, so I haven't really heard negative things about it. And I haven't done a lot of review watching, but just for the first three episodes, it's still pretty fun. It's definitely more of the same. And that's it for me. What about you, Zach?
So I saw the Liam Neeson movie Blacklight, which came out in February this year, although it made almost no money and no one seems to remember, like no one probably even remembers it came out. There's two Liam Neeson movies this year that like people like have totally just like one came out literally like 2 weeks ago and like no one knows it exists. Like he made a movie called Memory, like Martin Campbell, who just did like GoldenEye directed, and like no one like, that made like basically no money. But yeah, so Blacklight was like in February of this year. It's from the same guy who directed Honest Thief, like one of his other recent movies. And, you know, it's like basically typical Liam Neeson, like, action. Although, I mean, it's weird because, like, he said he was going to retire, and then he's made, like, how many movies since he said he was going to retire? Like, eight? Like, a dozen, like, more action movies? I feel like he maybe kind of should have, like, stuck to, like, I'm going to retire from action, because it's kind of ridiculous at this point, because, like, it's showing now. Like, it's, like, especially, like, when he's doing, like, hand-to-hand fights, it's so terrible. It's just, like, so, like,
Is it like a stunt double, or is it worse, where it's,
I don't know if it's, like, a stunt... but there's definitely, like, a lot of, like, editing to, like, you know, it's not as bad as, like, Taken 3, like, jumping over a fence editing, but, like, it's definitely noticeable, like, oh, we need to somehow cut this so it looks like Liam Neeson's, like, beat this guy down, but, like, he really can't do it. And then also, like, they're, like... Liam Neeson has to, like, run to chase people in this movie, and it's just like, wow, don't make Liam Neeson run anymore, guys. Like, he's an old man. Don't make him, like, run after people. If Liam Neeson is, like, driving a car or, like in a shootout, he can still do that, like, still be badass and do that stuff, but, like, running and, like, fighting is, like, it's very, very noticeable that he's an old man. But yeah, basically Blacklight is Liam Neeson is this fixer. He works for the director of the FBI. Like, he just comes in, like, as, like, a contractor, basically. And then he gets sent out to, like, whenever, like, deep cover FBI agents are in trouble and they need to get pulled out of, like, whatever they are. Like, Liam Neeson, like, goes in and, like, gets them out. So, like, his big intro action hero badass moment is, like, this one FBI agent is, like, undercover with, like, this, like, southern, you know, kind of, like, militia confederate kind of people, and then she's like they find out that she's, like, works for the government, so they're like ready to kill her, and then Lingus is, like, kind of come in, like, distract them and then get her out. So that's basically kind of, like, what he does. He like goes in and, like, grabs these, like, deep cover agents and, like, delivers them to, like, somewhere where they can, like, debrief and, like, basically kind of, like, reintegrate back into society, because they've been, like, deep cover for so long. They just, like go to, like, a, you know, get, like, mental health, like, assistance and stuff. But he gets a new job for this other FBI agent, like, this Dusty Crane. And but then, like, Dusty escapes, and then he's threatening to, like, go to, like, the reporters, because he's, like, he learned something about, like, the FBI director, and there's, like, and then he's, like, he wants to, like, expose it to, like, you know, like, the media. And then it basically turns out, like, the FBI director is, like, running this, like black ops, like, illegal, like, he's just like killing civilians for, like, if he disagrees with them, or, like, they're, like, threatening, like, what he believes is, like, the government that he, like, or, like, what the government should be doing, then he, like, has him killed. So there's super progressive, like political activist that, like, gets killed early in the movie. It's like he's, like, killing people, like, that are like threatening, like, the, like, status quo of, like, the government or whatever. So Liam Neeson basically figure, like learns this, then, like, he like Dusty gets killed, so then, like, Liam Neeson is like, I guess I'll work on this now. I'll work with the reporter now, and, like, take out the FBI director. And then obviously, because it's a Liam Neeson movie, like, his family is threatened as well. Like, he has a daughter and a granddaughter, so it's just like you get, like, the classic, like, don't go near my family, like.
And then they're like, we should totally go near his family.
Yeah. And there's also a kind of a weird, like, they sort of, like, get into it, but it's just like they just give Liam Neeson, like, a OCD for some reason. It's like, oh, I have OCD, by the way. Like, I have to, like, knock on things three times, or, like, I get really, like, obsessive thoughts sometimes. So, like, it's, like, affecting my, like, it's getting worse now. So it's like, I want to, like, retire and, like, not have to deal with this, like, very stressful job anymore.
Is that conveyed at all? Like,
they bring it up a little bit. Like, he's, like, kind of always, like, knocking on things three times, or, like, doing things three times, but if he's in, like, action mode, like, it doesn't affect him really at all. It doesn't, like, so.
he's like has to shoot them three times or something, or like counting the bullets.
Yeah. And they also do a weird thing where it's like that first like sequence where like he's getting like the agent out of like the like redneck like militia area, like they set up that he's like he almost has like Guy Ritchie like Sherlock Holmes vision where he like looks around like figures out like this plan to, like get like he like gets like propane tanks and like sets them up a way to like blow up and then like rigs up like a boat to explode and stuff. So it's like, oh, he can like he's like MacGyvering or like he can like figure out like ways to get out of these like situations like, in like clever ways. But then they don't bring that back until like the very end. Like he just like they set up in the beginning, like then like the rest of the movies is doing like normal, like just like car chase shootout stuff. But then like the last actually was like they bring that. It's like, oh yeah, he can like figure out things or like rig things up as like traps and stuff. So it's like they like bring that back like at the very end. So that was just like a weird like they didn't really. Like they set this up and then it didn't really pay it off until like the last action sequence.
That's a little disappointing.
But yeah, I mean it's like there it's like it's fine. It's like I mean it's a very like Redboxy movie. Like it's like, oh, if you see you see that Redbox, be like, oh yeah, I remember that Liam Neeson movie came out. Maybe I'll watch it. I think like The Ice Road is still probably the best recent Liam Neeson movie. Or like any of like the Jean Colette Sarah like The Commuter or something is definitely better, because The Commuter was definitely acknowledged that like Liam Neeson shouldn't be like fighting people really. That was more like a whodunit kind of thing. Like whodunit thriller, and this was trying to be more of like definitely trying to like be like it's Taken again. they're threatening his family. He's a black ops guy. He's a fixer.
Well, even the ice road one didn't quite make sense because like how did he know how to fight and take out like assassins? Yeah.
Well, at least in the Ice Road too, it was like he's behind the wheel of a truck for a lot of the movie, so it's like. He doesn't have to do like physical stuff a lot. Like he's like just behind the wheel of a truck driving, and so it's like you can just be like grimacing behind the wheel of a truck and like not have to like run or fight people. So it's just, like until like a little bit of fighting, but like it was mostly just like, oh yeah, he can like grimace behind the wheel of a truck and be like still badass and cool and stuff. But like this one definitely is like pushing like. Liam Neeson should not be doing foot chases anymore. He shouldn't be like fighting guys like and getting into like CQC fights with people anymore, because it's not good.
And it's mostly just him versus the whole like CIA Black Ops team, right?
There's like two main like Black Ops FBI guys that like the director sends after everyone to kill them. And it's also weird too, because like they introduced like this like the Dusty guy like that like is like trying to go to the media, like they give him a lot of the like early action stuff, so it's like, oh, Liam Neeson can't do this stuff, so we'll have this guy do this stuff. So like he's doing like parkour fights and like running and like doing all this stuff, and then but it seems where like Liam Neeson isn't even involved in it. It's like totally, it's like these like other action sequences where it's just like Liam Neeson's not there, it's just like this other character who's younger and can do it actually. So it's like, I guess it's kind of like one of their like ways to like get around it. Just like just have Liam Neeson not even be involved in it. So like just find a younger dude that can like do action like to co-star with Liam Neeson, and he'll do all the action stuff.
Oh boy, it's also weird. It's the reporter, like the WikiLeaker.
Well, he wasn't like a deep cover FBI guy, and then he like Liam Neeson is supposed to pull him back in because like the director's like, pull this guy back in. He's like, he's gonna go to the media. We gotta get him back, and then. He's like on the run. He's like, I'm not going back. I gotta tell the media what's going on. Like, I gotta expose the truth. So yeah, it's fine. It's not terrible. It's not very good. It's like if you see it streaming somewhere, or like if you have like a free Redbox movie or something, maybe check it out if you're a Liam Neeson fan. But. Definitely better recent Liam Neeson movies than this one. I think even the last one that this guy did, like Mark Williams' director, I think like Honest Thief is probably better than this one. And then I also checked out the season finale of Halo on Paramount Plus. So that the first season of Halo is wrapped up. If you want to, you can subscribe to Paramount Plus and watch the entire season of Halo. It's an entertaining show. It's not a great show. Like, I don't, it's not like, you know, like top tier prestige television, but it's entertaining enough to be like, it's got enough like fun action and weird like sci-fi stuff going on that it's fun. I also have like almost no, like I know a couple things about the lore through like osmosis, but I'm not like deep into like the lore of Halo, so like I don't, a lot of stuff, a lot
you're
of
not things, distracted by yeah, all the things
yeah. Yeah, a lot of things are just like pissing off people, like all of, like I've seen this, like there's so many like pissed off like Halo fans, I'm just like, this isn't the lore, ah. like
I feel like I'm gonna be that guy.
Like, I don't have any of that, so I'm just like, I don't, if this character is not how they are in the games, I don't know, so I'm just going off of the show. So I think it's like making it much like more enjoyable that way. But yeah, I mean, definitely I think it probably could have had more action, because there's definitely a couple episodes where it's just like there's not really any action at all. Like, I feel like they blow their wad in the first episode for a while, and then like episode 2 and 3 are just like there's like almost no action, or like barely any action in them. But then episode five has like another huge action sequence, which is pretty awesome. So so yeah, I think overall, I think it's worth checking out. It's if you just like set your expectations a little bit lower. Like, it's not going to be like, you know, like top tier sci-fi television. It's just like a kind of like, it's like a schlocky entertaining video game show. And yeah, and then it's some cool action, some weird side plots that like are not even acknowledged in the season finale. Like, there's like whole like other characters that they introduced that like are like have their own side plot that like got left behind like 2 episodes ago, and they like not even factoring into the season finale. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that sounds kind of bizarre. It's like, hey, it's like filler, and then they just never go back to it.
Yeah, and I don't know if they said if it's renewed yet. Oh, it is renewed for season 2. So we're definitely in season 2. So stuff. So it definitely ends on a big cliffhanger, and then we'll hopefully get it resolved whenever season 2 comes out. So yeah, if you have Paramount Plus, I mean, check it out. Check out the first episode at least and see what you think. So if nothing else, the first episode has like, well, like probably one of the best action sequences of the whole show. So in the, like the first 10 minutes or whatever, 15 minutes. So, but yeah, I saw that, and then I also saw, I haven't seen the most recent episode, but I've seen like the first 4 episodes of Under the Banner of Heaven, which is, it's an FX on Hulu show. So it's only on Hulu. It's not, but it's like under the FX label, but it's only on Hulu. And it's a true crime miniseries. It's only going to be 1 season, 7 episodes. And it stars Andrew Garfield as a Mormon police detective. And it's based on a true, it's, so it's based on a true event, based on a true murder that happened. And in the Mormon community of like, I think, it's not Salt Lake City, but it's in like, it's like a smaller town or city in Utah. And yeah, this woman and her like baby daughter are horribly murdered, and then Andrew Garfield and his partner are investigating, and they kind of like learn that like they're like, they have like the husband, it seems like the main suspect to begin with, but then it's like as they like question him, they kind of like learn that like, oh, like this guy's brothers and his family are like, they might have become like really like fanatical, like, you know, like zealots, and they're like went in the woods and became like super violent anti-government like people. So that might be like the main like driving force behind what happened.
So it's almost like True Detective, where they encounter like, you know, off the grid hobos.
This, like, if you're looking for something that, like, will fill that, like, True Detective gap, like, I think definitely check this out, because this has, like, very, very true, like True Detective vibes. Yeah, or I think if you're like True Detective, you'll probably like this show. It's not fun. It's not a fun show, but like it's not
a feel good detective story, huh?
No, it's not. Yeah, it's not like don't watch this if you're looking for like, you know, fun happy times. It's like it's a very dark thing to happen, and it's like a very dark show. But yeah, see, very good so far. Like Andrew Garfield is great as always in it. And like awesome supporting cast, like Sam Worthington's in this show, and Wyatt Russell, and Rory Culkin, and Daisy Edgar Jones. So like a really, really great like supporting cast. And yeah, like if you're into like true crime, or yeah, like True Detective, I think definitely check it out. It's a little hard to binge, because each episode is like a solid hour and like it, at least an hour or more. So it's like you're watching one episode and you're like, wow, I feel like I'm done. I can't watch another one. It's like that was like a solid hour of, you know, true crime stuff. It's not like a, you know, like a 45-minute thing, and you're like, oh yeah, let's go to the next one. Like it's like this is like a solid hour of content. But yeah, very, very like interesting. You know, story, like they really dig into like the like kind of like interesting aspects of Mormonism, like all the rules and like all the like kind of quirks of, you know, the Mormon religion. And they even dig into like some of like there's like flashbacks to like Joseph Smith era, like because there's there's a whole thing where like obviously like there's the whole thing where like he found like the, you know, like the golden discs or whatever, and that's how
the thing wrote, that like, South Park makes fun of.
Yeah, but then apparently like he wrote like another thing called like the Peacemaker that's like there's the whole thing where it's like he was like basically turned against the government, because the government was, like, obviously like the Mormons got hunted down in like the kind of Wild West, like whatever era they were in. And so Joseph Smith became like very anti-government, and then there's this whole thing where like if you become more fanatical Mormon, or like you're like look into like the history, and you start like following like the like other like the like more like found historical stuff, like there's a whole thing where like they don't acknowledge like the amendments to the Constitution, like they only acknowledge like the like original Constitution, that's it. So stuff like any of the amendments, like especially like anything like taxes are a very big thing. Like that's the thing that kind of like this like Mormon family that is involved in like the crime. They're like the thing that like kicks them off is like they start getting like taxed on like their like business and stuff. And they're like, the government shouldn't be taxing us. We can't pay, like we don't have to pay this. Like,
wow, I don't know. That's what makes it get violent. It's just, oh, taxes, fuck that.
Yeah, well then they start Joseph Smith wrote this thing called the Peacemaker, and it gets into that's where like the like polygamy comes in, and like it's like, yeah, like the only government they acknowledge is like the like true Constitution, which is like nothing, none of the amendments that added to the Constitution are they're all legal in their eyes and stuff. So it really digs into like the like normal, like the normal beliefs of Mormonism, and like the more like extreme fanatical views of Mormonism. So yeah, if you're interested in that side of it too, it's pretty interesting. They Andrew Garfield's character is also Mormon, so you get to like see like his family like follows religion, but then also like this like fanatical like zealot like group. It's like warping stuff, or like really going extreme with their beliefs.
I see.
I saw
like the poster art, and I was just like, what is this? It's like Andrew Garfield just looking like stressed.
Yeah, and it's based on a book, which is obviously based on the actual true crime. But yeah, definitely It'll probably fill that like True Detective hole in your heart if you're looking for something that will fill that like, True Detective gap. It's got like you know like Andrew Garfin and he has like a partner, so it's like you know cop partners and stuff, and like the kind of like the all star like supporting cast and stuff. So yeah, definitely check it out if you're into that sort of thing on Hulu. And that's it for me this week. So we can wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We've got all kinds of stuff up there. We've got we finally got our trip report from PAX East. So if you want to find out what we played and did at PAX East last month, you can check that out. You can check out all the trailers that we talked about this episode. You can check it out, watch them all on our site. And all the regular stuff that goes up on the site every day is up there. So head over, check all that stuff out. And so for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram @everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.